getting up to country. Sure is hard on a man. Now them special leading up to country. They sure is hard on a man. Now they would put him off when he hungry and won't even let him ride no train.
Welcome to Truth Jihad Radio, a radio show that goes all out for truth 5 hours a week, 5 guests, sometimes more every week, bringing you all kinds of interesting information that usually gets filtered out of the mainstream institutions. I guess we're doing open source intelligence here at Truth Jihad Radio, and that's what my guest Robert David Steele is famous for. He's a former spy, clandestine services CIA. I don't know if I'm allowed to say that. Now they're going to have to kill me. Honorary hacker, number one Amazon reviewer for nonfiction, and he's known for his proposing open source everything and electoral reform, which is the subject of his last two books. It's an honor to welcome Robert David Steele to Truth Jihad Radio. Hey, how are you doing, Robert?
Oh, Kevin, I'm doing great. Glad to be with you and your listeners.
Yeah, it's great to have you. You know, I think I met you at a conference in D.C. way back when. It was years ago, and kind of always wanted to get you on the radio, and so here we are. I think you're barking up a lot of really, really good trees here, and especially open source intelligence. Let's start with that. You've been in, you know, you worked for the post office or whatever three-letter agency you
want to call. No, it's all open. Yeah. I mean, in fact, I came out from undercover after Alvin Toffler wrote a chapter about me called The Future of the Spy. And your listeners can find that chapter online very easily by looking up Alvin Toffler, The Future of the Spy. And my most famous soundbite in the 1990s, after having been a spy for 9 years and then created the Marine Corps Intelligence Command, was "Don't send a spy where a schoolboy can go." The problem with the United States is it's spending $100 billion a year on the 5% you can steal and virtually nothing on everything else.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've noticed. You know, I've had a couple of CIA people on my show who actually didn't seem to have a clue about what's been going on in this country since 9/11. And I don't think they're faking it. I think they honestly just don't know. You know, I think we're living in a world where working for an alphabet agency doesn't necessarily mean that you are getting accurate information.
Well, in fact, it can make you blind and deaf. One of CIA's biggest problems, the reason we got Afghanistan wrong, for example, is that 90% of the so-called secrets that the humans collect are handouts from foreign liaison. And so basically, we got Afghanistan wrong because we kept listening to the Pakistanis and relying on the Pakistanis. And of course, they lie to us constantly, and we don't know any better. And in the signals arena, NSA is famously on record as saying it doesn't process more than 1% of what it collects. So we have this vast, expensive process for collecting secrets that are largely worthless. And we don't actually do what I like to talk about as the acme of skill in modern intelligence, which is ethical, evidence-based decision support.
Well, that's what we're supposed to do in the academy, too. But unfortunately, quite often the academy seems to be as corrupted as the intelligence services.
Well, this is true. And one of the things I've noticed is that most academics are very lazy. They won't do any research that requires that they leave their air-conditioned cubicles. They also tend to be monolingual. They only read in English. They don't actually use citation analytics to find out who's writing the best work, the most cited work in their area, not just in English, but in Chinese and French and Spanish and German and Russian and Farsi. So we actually have 8 intelligence or information tribes, and I'll just itemize them alphabetically. The Academy, commerce, especially small business, government, especially local, law enforcement, the media, the military, and nonprofit, non-government. And I forgot civil society, which includes labor unions and religions. All 8 of these information tribes have become corrupt and stupid in the last 50 years.
Yeah, it kind of seems like we should almost be changing the name to the stupidity community instead of the intelligence community. But it seems that with today's technology, it theoretically should be possible to greatly improve things. by, well, having better methods, serious algorithms, and so on. What are some of the key reforms that could use today's technology to get better intelligence?
Well, first off, let me say that one of the real problems that we've had, not only in the intelligence community, but in the private sector, is that everybody has been focused on collection and ignoring both processing and sense-making tools. Micah Sifry has a wonderful new book out that I strongly recommend called The Big Disconnect, Why the Internet Hasn't Fixed Politics Yet. And he touches on a core issue that I and others began addressing with Howard Rheingold and several others in 1985. Okay. I actually got John Gage from Sun Open Office to speak for me in 1992, and I tried to get him to understand that Open Office was nice, but we actually needed 18 different tools for ingesting all forms of information, translating all foreign languages, being able to index images, and then sense-making tools to detect patterns and anomalies and so forth. And finally, information sharing and collaborative sense-making tools to be able to do conversations, which are where the truth really comes out. That still doesn't exist today. Doesn't exist at CIA, and it doesn't exist at Goldman Sachs or anywhere else. People are still faking it.
Interesting. Well, I agree with you that the truth often comes out in conversation, which is one reason that I host this radio show as a way of doing education by other means, since I got chased out of the academy for looking too carefully at 9/11. I use open office, by the way. I used it to produce this new book, We Are Not Charlie Hebdo, Freethinkers Question the French 9/11, which I think is a kind of a breakthrough in a sense in open source intelligence, in that I was able to get this book out less than 3 months after the Charlie Hebdo affair happened by using modern communications tools to find the most credible people doing the most useful work on the Charlie Hebdo case, including a couple of French people, although the people over in France are a little more terrified than we are, just like we're more terrified of 9/11 truth than they are, which is why Thierry Meyssan got that right first. But I think this is very much open source intelligence when you look at something like that, you know, looks like there's a backstory that's not making the media, and use the internet to find the people who were doing the best work figuring it out, and then putting it out in credible form in a academic style book very, very quickly. And to me, this is, you know, I think I'm following the path that you've been blazing for decades.
Well, first off, let me say that I am certainly convinced myself that the Paris 12 were killed by a joint Mossad-French intelligence operation. That was a false flag terror operation through and through. And one of the reasons was to punish the French for supporting the Palestinians. And another reason was because the Jewish settlements, the illegal Jewish settlements, are failing. And Israel is desperate to scare more Jews out of Europe in order to occupy those illegal settlements. But going back to your point, one of the things that you've quietly said here, which I think your listeners need to understand, is that open source intelligence is human intelligence. It's not technical intelligence. Mary Meeker is on record as saying that less than 1% of big data is actually processed. Most people know now that the internet is very shallow. Google only indexes the shallow internet, which is to say between 2 and 4%. They completely miss all the PDFs and all the stuff that doesn't have persistent URLs and so forth. So what you did was exactly right. You went and found humans who then helped you create an understanding in a conversation and therefore actionable public intelligence.
We reached exactly the same conclusions that you just outlined.
Yeah, but the tools, yeah, I understand that, but the tools are not there. We really do need a set of tools that allows the public, and this is why I funded Earth Intelligence Network, the nonprofit, when I still had a company that could generate profits. The tools are not there. The public, for example, should be able to immediately confront every one of the 935 lies that Dick Cheney told with media complicity. I mean, the New York Times is a corrupt organization that has totally lost its integrity. It's lost its ability to do investigative journalism. It's absolutely worthless to the public as a so-called news that's fit to print or whatever. And then similarly, the Washington Post, the Los Angeles Times, largely worthless. A few occasional good pieces, but largely worthless. So the public needs to have tools that allow them to very quickly do fact-checking, identify true costs, check foreign language sources and methods, because right now it's sad, but Russia Today and Al Jazeera are vastly more useful to the intelligent American citizen than the Voice of America or the BBC or any of the garbage sources that we have in our mainstream media here in the United States today.
Indeed. And I would throw Press TV in there because
yes,
they let me pretty much say what I want. And I just broke a pretty interesting story there today that should be published tomorrow.
I do watch Press TV. And in fact, I went to graduate school, my first graduate school with several Iranians. And I formed the impression that the Iranians and the Palestinians are some of the sharpest minds on the planet. And they have a very, very high percentage of engineers and PhDs in their ranks.
That's right. And probably that's why the Israelis are panicked at the collaboration of what they would consider to be intransigent Iranians and Palestinians.
Well, I think the Iranians, I mean, the Israelis, really, the Zionists, because I don't confuse the Zionist government of Israel with loyal American Jews or loyal Israeli Jews. What we have right now is a Zionist neo-fascist government in Israel that has totally corrupted the U.S. government and gained access backed up by Casino Jack and several other wealthy Jews. You know, it stunned me to find out there are only 8 million Jews in the United States. But the top 10 billionaires have basically collaborated with the Zionist government. And also Jewish organizations that take money and direction from Israel have an exemption. Ever since John F. Kennedy was assassinated, one of the things he was trying to do was demand that any Jewish organization that takes direction or money from Israel be labeled an agent of a foreign power. That still is not being done today. So the Zionist government has grossly excessive illicit influence in the United States. And I think they're starting to realize that that's coming to an end.
And they may have overplayed their hand several times, actually. People are suggesting that Netanyahu's forcing Congress to kneel and kiss his ring just recently was yet another example of this going too far. Some of us would add that 9/11 was perhaps a form of going too far as well.
Well, I don't blame 9/11 on the Israelis. I blame 9/11 on the Saudis and on Dick Cheney, who basically we received warnings from 13 different countries prior to 9/11. And 3 months prior to 9/11, Dick Cheney chose to make 9/11 his own. He scheduled a national counterterrorism exercise for 9/11. The FEMA Emergency Operations Center was set up on the pier on New York on the 10th, the night before. There is absolutely no question that 9/11 was of, by, and for Dick Cheney.
Okay, but who was advising him? Didn't he have Scooter
Libby?
Certainly,
look, I'm not going to join you in tarring the Israelis on 9/11. Certainly, he had the neocons absolutely interested in making 9/11 the pretext for war, as Jim Famford puts it in his books. But as best I can tell, the Israelis did not plan, fund, or execute 9/11. They only encouraged it and filmed it. The Saudis are the ones who funded it.
Okay, but now what did the Saudi government have to gain by 9/11?
I'm honest to God, not completely sure, but we have to remember that the Saudi government funded the bin Laden movement. The Saudi government funded the jihadist movement in Afghanistan. The U.S. government made a severe mistake in overlooking the virulent Wahhabism that is being pushed by the Saudis all over the world, from Indonesia to the Central Asian countries and into China and Russia. From where I sit, the Saudi government is a failing dictatorship that is abusing its people, and it is sponsoring the spread of terrorism and the spread of a virulent form of Islam. It has funded ISIS. The CIA is training ISIS. All of this is bad for America and bad for the region. I want to just end by mentioning an excellent book by Ambassador Mark Palmer called Breaking the Real Axis of Evil, in which he points out that the U.S. government is actively supporting and best pals with 42 of the 44 dictators on the planet. The U.S. is not a democracy, and our support for democracy abroad is hypocritical fraud.
Well, I can't disagree with any of that, including the bad-mouthing of the Saudis, which I actually agree with. I'm Muslim, and I'm appalled that this group is in charge of the holy places and spreading mischief all over the world, funding a lot of the mosques here in the U.S. Of course, this notion that they're all part of some great conspiracy because of that is not true. But it is true that the Saudis have a lot of influence here in the U.S. and have done a lot of bad things to impede American Islam from growing the way it should. One of my friends actually is locked out of the D.C. mosque where he basically got chased out in a coup d'etat and has been leading prayers on the sidewalk in front of the mosque in D.C. ever since. It was completely taken over by the Saudis. So yeah, the Saudis are every bit as bad as you say, or at least some of them are. But let me just see whether you know this makes sense to you. Doesn't it seem that part of what 9/11 did was it prevented that group within Saudi Arabia that wanted to break away from the U.S. empire? And this group is not necessarily hardline Wahhabi. They're just sort of independent nationalists. The king made a speech in August 2001 saying the time has come for, quote, a parting of the ways. End of the petrodollar, end of the U.S.-Saudi alliance. And then 9/11 happened, and implicitly there were U.S. nukes pointing at Saudi Arabia, and they cleaned up, and they took out the independent nationalists, and since then Saudi Arabia has been brought back into its permanent role as a propping up the petrodollar and working with the U.S. And the Zionists. So don't you think that casts a somewhat different light on what the motivation for 9/11 was and who was really behind it?
I'm not ready to buy into that, but I'm also not prepared to discuss it in detail. From where I sit, the Saudi Arabian government and the Israeli governments are in cahoots at many levels.
Yeah.
And I consider them both toxic to American foreign policy interests. The problem we have is that American foreign policy exists to sell weapons. NATO is a weapon-mongering institution. Right now, we have a government that is focused on taking money from the taxpayer and distributing it to the largest contributors to campaign funds for the two-party tyranny. I'm a champion of electoral reform in part because I have realized that we will never have an honest discussion in Washington about any issue unless we first destroy the two-party tyranny and restore integrity to our electoral process and thence to our government, our economy, and our society. So I consider electoral reform the single fastest, cheapest, most likely to succeed nonviolent revolution that we can implement.
Well, that makes absolute sense to me. Are you in agreement that there are a lot of indications that both the 2000 and 2004 presidential elections were stolen?
Well, look, ever since John F. Kennedy was assassinated by the perfect storm, I mean, the combination of New York money and Texas energy and the Cuban mafia based in New Orleans and J. Edgar Hoover terrified that he was going to lose his job and Lyndon Johnson terrified that he was going to be indicted and sent to prison for peddling influence out of the White House. Ever since Kennedy was assassinated, no president has been a legitimate president. Yep. I'm told Jimmy Carter cried his heart out when they sat him down and gave him the talk. Now, as far as the electoral process, when the League of Women Voters sacrificed their integrity and allowed the debates to be stolen from them by the two-party debate commission, that was the end of any semblance of democracy in the United States in terms of elections. Now, when Diebold was brought in, that was actually the institutionalization of electoral fraud. From that point forward, no vote counted at all. The primaries and the general election were preordained. And in fact, in 2012, we know for a fact that Ron Paul had several primary elections stolen from him.
Right.
So it's all bad. And I really like to make the point to people that there are 8 separate electoral reforms I'd be glad to talk about if you wish.
Yeah. Let's get into the specifics of what it will take to fix this.
All right. What I want to do here is point your listeners to a tiny URL, http://tinyurl.com/openpower. And this is where I have placed years of work by multiple stakeholders. And this is where they can find videos and links and other things. But primarily, they can find one slide that itemizes the 8 different things that need to be enacted at the same time. I love Lawrence Lessig's campaign against money, And I love the individuals that are trying to get gerrymandering ending. And I completely agree with Peter Ackerman and Jill Stein that are trying to get the debates expanded. But in fact, you need 8 separate things. And I'll just itemize them now. And there's a slide with all of this at tinyurl.com/openpower. So number 1 is free and equal ballot access. Not only should this be free and equal for all the parties, but we should have open primaries. Because what we have right now are primaries controlled by the 2 extremist parties, which ensure that only extremists are given an opportunity to compete in the 2-party monopoly. So free and equal ballot access at both the primary and the general level are absolutely essential.
Let's just quickly remark that isn't it an irony that the extremist parties call anybody who opposes them an extremist?
Yeah, of course. I mean, they're morons. The second is tightly drawn districts plus at-large members for distributed voting blocks. Now, there's several states from California and Arizona to others that are trying to implement citizen-drawn districts. And this is being fought in the Supreme Court because gerrymandering is what provides lifetime incumbency to the criminally misrepresentative Congress today. Now, when I say at-large members, we have, for example, a very large gay and lesbian community that does not live in any one defined district. So it may well be, and I'm not putting forward what I say are the answers, but rather items, 8 items for discussion by the public. It may well be that we need at least one senator and at least one representative that are totally focused on gay and lesbian issues.
Yeah, that sounds like what they do in Iran, where they have a special seat reserved for the Jewish community, although I don't think they have one for the gay community there.
All right.
And I don't think they ever will.
I would gladly have a seat for the Catholic Opus Dei community and a seat for the Jewish community, provided that we end the very, very toxic nature of the relationship of Zionist Israel to all Jewish organizations in the United States today. Mm-hmm. They are all, without exception, agents of a foreign power, although maybe Rabbi Michael Lerner is an exception.
He's an honorable exception. He's in the book.
Exactly. I admire him completely. All right. So number 3 is equal public funding for all qualified candidates. And I certainly would turn over Citizens United. That was a travesty. And in fact, if corporations have personality, I want to see more CEOs going to jail. Because what we have really done is we have privatized the profit and externalized the costs. And we have allowed our corporations, all of which operate under public charters, to run amok. So equal public funding for all qualified candidates. Number 4 is free and equal access to print and broadcast media for all qualified candidates. The airwaves are public. The newspapers are a public service. We need to ensure that every candidate can get their message out without having to pay for it. Number 5 is debates to include independent and both accredited and emerging small party candidates. I had to run for president in 2012 in order to learn that there are 8 accredited parties in the United States, 6 of which are blocked from ballot access by the 2-party tyranny. And among the emerging parties that are not accredited, certainly Working Families deserves a lot more attention. Now, 6 is paper ballots counted publicly and on-site. Both Diebold machines and mail-in ballots are absolute documented fraud. They should be eliminated for the 2016 election. And I mean eliminated. No electronic voting whatsoever. Paper ballots counted publicly and on-site. Number 7 is end the winner-take-all plurality voting and institute a new voting system. Now, Maine has just come out in favor of the instant runoff. Maine is also talking about how they want to start doing runoffs in which the people with the most negative votes are eliminated and you work your way up towards someone who is least offensive to everybody. And finally, number 8, all legislation posted in advance for public comment and public vote. Today, we have a criminal Congress whose blocks of votes are sold to the highest bidder among the 42 identified billionaires that own the U.S. Congress. Members do not read, nor do they write legislation. So these 8 things together are what would allow us to restore integrity to the U.S. electoral process.
And would you agree with me that the hand-counted paper ballots are probably the single most important of those, given that counting with rigged machines just completely negates everything else?
No, I would not agree, and I'll tell you why. It doesn't matter if you're counting paper ballots if you still have gerrymandering and a two-party tyranny. All eight, this is integral consciousness.
Okay.
People have to expand their minds and understand that all eight of these, this is like picture voting as a car, okay? Paper ballots are one of the wheels on the car. You can't have a car unless you have all four wheels, an engine, gasoline, and an infrastructure, including roads, okay? So no one of these will make a difference. It's all eight together that will make a difference.
Hmm. Well, I can't argue with you there. Have you talked to Senator Mike Gravel about this? He's a big proponent of expanding democracy.
Well, I've talked to a lot of people, including Dennis Kucinich, and what I find is they all talk a good game, but not a single one of them is actually ready to introduce legislation. Now, I am hopeful that Angus King, the independent senator from Maine, might be persuaded, along with Elizabeth Warren, to introduce legislation, but frankly, I'm not optimistic. I don't think Warren has the guts to challenge the Democratic machine.
Mm-hmm. And is it really the parties themselves that are the bad guys here blocking this reform? Or are there forces, I would argue, plutocratic forces behind the parties that feel that the current corrupt system serves their interests better?
Well, Kevin, all it takes is an honest Congress to put the plutocrats out of power. You know, there's a wonderful cartoon of the plutocrats standing on a plank that's over a cliff, and the public or the Congress is standing on the side of the plank that is on firm land. Now, all it takes is for us to step off the plank and these guys go into free fall. So here's my bottom line. I do not blame the banks. I do not blame the corporations, and I do not blame the billionaires. I blame Congress for losing its integrity. And I would just point out to you that this whole thing about Congress begging for money and shaking down businesses for campaign contributions, that all started with Congress. It wasn't originally businesses bribing congressmen. It was congressmen shaking down businesses. And I finally realized, and one of the reasons I want to eliminate the IRS and eliminate all income taxes, is that the Internal Revenue Service and the tax code is how Congress blackmails business. That's how Congress puts in something that people will then pay to have taken out. So I favor Edgar Feige's automated payment transaction tax, which taxes all transactions, including currency and stock transactions on Wall Street that are not now taxed. Mm-hmm. And it eliminates all income taxes and all other taxes.
That sounds like a good idea to me. Personally, I find the worst aspect of income taxes is the way they force everyone to theoretically report every single transaction that they've been involved into the government. Now, this raises a question about your proposed substitute. Would that also involve a kind of a complete surveillance of every transaction?
Well, it's a good question. And one of the reasons I really stress these are all things that have to be discussed by the public. What I'm trying to do is spark a public conversation. I'm not trying to deliver pre-processed answers, although I've done a lot of homework. And when I ran for president, a lot of stakeholders came out and got in touch with me. And so what I have done is I have distilled and integrated the ideas of many others into a package that is now ready for public discussion. The short answer is that, like a sales tax, a transaction tax can be applied to every electronic transaction. And Feige has also thought about how to basically tax cash transactions by taxing the cash as it enters the bank or leaves the bank. And I frankly believe that our present taxation system is very, very hostile to the average working man and woman, because they're true wealthy people. Once you're a millionaire or above, you don't actually make your money on income. You make your money on untaxed dividends and other equities and appreciation of land and yachts and Learjets and so forth. So right now we have a tax system that basically screws the 99%.
No question about it. And yeah, your substitute does sound like an improvement. I would suggest, though, that since Congress, when it originally passed the income tax, was told and told us that this was only going to apply to the wealthiest, you know, tiny minority of people and the corporations. That's what that was really supposed to do. And taxation before that was primarily actually done through customs duties. And so it's never been something that was supposed to come down on ordinary people at all. So maybe there's a way to find a simplified way to raise money for the government without having to be so intrusive and be, going after everybody in every transaction. I'm not sure what that is, but I'm just throwing that out there for you.
Well, there's a lot of, there's certainly a constitutional convention that's needed at some point in time, because the federal government is supposed to be an administrative entity. And we are the United States of America, not the United People of America. The federal government should not be allowed to own land in the West. The federal government should not even be allowed to own buildings. I think we really need to rethink how we do this. And one of the things I like about Feige's automated payment transaction tax is that the public sets the tax rate in a national ballot, not the government. So, for example, if we have a national tax rate and we're at peace and the government decides that we need to go to war, they have to make their case to the public, and the public has to agree to raise that tax rate, or there is no money for war. Borrowing is forbidden.
Wow. Well, that sounds good, as long as we don't have them still able to do big false flags that would convince the panicked people to vote for war and higher taxes. And that leads me, how do we stop false flags?
That's a good question. I mean, I've noticed with amusement that every terrorist threat in the United States in the last several years has actually been funded by the FBI. And it's gotten to the point now that Muslim communities are taking out restraining orders against the FBI to get them to cease and desist from being provocateurs of young Islamic people who don't know any better. The most famous and silliest example is where the FBI paid $3,000 to a retarded Muslim kid living with his mother, trying to get the Muslim kid to move out of his mother and have an apartment and go to the mosque and recruit some terrorists. I mean, how stupid can you be to even approve that at a GS-14 or GS-15 level within the FBI? So we have a lot of good people in the government that have basically lost their mind. The bureaucracy is on automatic pilot. But again, I want to come back to this whole thing with the Saudis. There is a book that I like by Steve Emerson. I know that there's some people that don't like
Steve Emerson.
I like what Steve Emerson did with American Jihad. And I will tell you that I do believe that the Saudis and the Pakistanis and others are proselytizing here in the United States. And that is not a good thing for us. I don't believe any religion and any foreign country should be allowed to proselytize within religious institutions in the United States.
Well, okay, but Emerson has a record of a lot of exaggerated and hyperbolic and sometimes wrong statements that seem to demonize Islam in general. And I don't know, it just seems to me that if we treat Islam like any other religion, then a whole lot of these worries would just evaporate. And then if we also called off the war on Islam and stopped our attacks on Muslim countries and stopped supporting Israeli genocide against Palestinians and stealing the Holy Land, which has been Islamically administered Holy Land almost.
Well, I'll meet you halfway. As soon as all the Muslim dictators are out of power, I'm with you.
Gotcha. Well, you know, how about the, they're Christian dictators in Africa and so on and so forth.
Also, all dictators need to go. If we had an honest government, we would shut down the Undersecretary of Defense for Intelligence, which is a very expensive organization. We would replace it with the Undersecretary of Defense for Peace. And we would offer every dictator, all 42 of them, an exit strategy. The fact is the United States government really does not represent democracy, and it does not seek to foster peace and prosperity for the larger groups. And that's where we've gone wrong. We really do need to start thinking about representing the public interest. And for me, the public interest is one in which dictators around the world are not tolerated. Predatory corporations are not tolerated. Banks that destroy economies are not tolerated, and we work toward free energy and clean water for everybody.
Well, that sounds pretty good to me. Is there a structural problem, though, in that to some extent, democracy in other parts of the world, or governments that serve their own people's interests, which is what democracy, if it were real, would bring, would lead to a redistribution of wealth globally that would not necessarily favor the American corporations.
One of the problems that we have is that if government loses its integrity, then corporations can run amok. And this is why I really stress I'm not angry at the corporations. They're doing what the government is allowing them to do. If you have integrity in government and if you have integrity in the electoral process, which includes every citizen paying attention, then all of this stuff goes away. Corporations operate under public charters, and the fact is we simply have not held them to account.
Okay, let me translate this into the libertarian kind of lingo, in which, you know, they argue that democracy is problematic because the relatively poor majority is always going to use its power to tax or thereby rob the relatively rich minority. And I'm not entirely in disagreement with that. It's just that I'm sort of in favor of a certain amount of that kind of so-called robbery, just to keep the playing field level. But in, you know, the U.S. has been overturning democracies since World War II, whether in, you know, Mossadegh in Iran in 1953, and Guatemala many times, Chile in 73, and on and on and on. With presumably because there is no advantage in having the people who control these resources in other countries actually controlling those resources. And so would we have to be altruistic to wish democracy on the world?
Well, no. I mean, you know, if you start to understand true cost economics, you begin to understand that all of our policies have essentially perpetuated an industrial era system that is toxic to the earth. Big agriculture is toxic to the earth. We actually need to start thinking about eliminating animal husbandry, because the water drain is too great. It takes 5,000 gallons of water to put a pound of beef. I mean, it takes 5,000 gallons of water to put a pound of beef on your table. It takes 20 gallons to put an equivalent amount of vegetation nutrition, like tomatoes and peppers and stuff. Again, the three things that I believe in as an intelligence professional are holistic analytics, true cost economics, and open source everything engineering. We don't have a right to the resources in all those other countries. We also have more than our fair share of sunlight. For the United States of America to not be completely energy independent today is an indictment of every government going back to Lyndon Johnson.
And do you think solar and wind by themselves could do it, or do we need some kind of breakthrough?
Oh, no. First off, energy is a combination of collection, storage, and transmission. Solar energy and wind energy and also wave thermal and even river energy. You can now have vortex energy coming out of installations and designs in streams and rivers that are totally friendly to the fish. They do not interfere with fish migrations or living things. All of this is well known. All of this has been repressed. There's a guy, Sepp Hasselberger, that's done a great job of following alternative energies for many years. He's one of my favorite contributing editors at Phi Beta Iota, the public intelligence blog. And the bottom line here is the United States government has been, with malice aforethought, corrupt and deliberately ignorant and deliberately inattentive. We have 9 states in the United States that are desperately running out of water. And their governors are exempting the fracking industry and the animal husbandry industry and the almond industry because their governments are corrupt. The U.S. citizens should be saying, hey, stop this. But again, I come back to my basic point. No individual issue, whether it's education or energy or family or immigration or social justice or water, no issue is going to get a public hearing in the United States of America, a proper, honest hearing, until we achieve electoral reform. Electoral reform is ground zero for the United States of America.
Well, I'm 80% with you there. I've had this kind of conversation with Senator Mike Gravel, who has the same high hopes for democracy. And, you know, he thinks that having the public vote directly on questions in referenda will be a huge improvement over indirect representative democracy. And I tell them, when I lived in California for 15 years or so, I saw propositions coming and going on the ballot, and I saw the special interests buying victory on 90% plus of these propositions. So I think you're right. It's a holistic issue. There's no, you know, single bullet here. It takes that whole package of electoral reforms, and then maybe it might work. I just read David Ray Griffin's new book on global warming. It's called Unprecedented. And he makes the argument that we do have what it would take to live on renewable energy or ecologically friendly energy, and that it's not happening primarily because of the power of the fossil fuel industry.
That's true. Mm-hmm. And in fact, if you eliminated all of the subsidies that we still provide to the fossil fuel industry, you would find the fossil fuel is twice as expensive as solar power. This is a corrupt situation. And I would also like to say there was a time there when there was a $500 million project that was being shaped to move 1 million Somalis from UN resettlement camps in Ethiopia and Uganda and elsewhere to an unoccupied, uncontested portion of Somalia that had three things: dirt, sunlight, and seawater. And I was able to get the total cost per Somali for moving them, putting them in a dirt house, a solid shelter, with unlimited free energy and unlimited desalinated water, and I threw in the internet and a hydroponics industry, which eliminates pesticides.
Yeah, I'm almost ready to move to Somalia already.
Well, let me tell you something. I got the cost per person down to $500. I am not making this up. For $500 per person, I can give every person on the planet shelter, water, and energy, and the internet. And for what we spent on the Iraq War, which was based on 935 lies, I probably could have done that.
Yikes. So what happened to your proposal?
Oh, I think the guy putting it together got the first $50 million and ran off with it, and the project died. So bottom line is, we don't lack for intelligence in this world. We lack for integrity.
Yeah. And what do you do about that? Is there a structural fix to that? You know, Plato said, who will guard the guardians? And you know,
That's interesting, because Will Durant addressed this also in his book. His 1916 doctoral thesis is now available as Will Durant's Philosophy and the Social Problem. And what it boils down to is your single most precious national resource is an educated, attentive citizenry. And we have been trying to create dumbed down factory drones since 1920. So we have a lot of catching up to do, and the silver lining in the dark internet cloud is that people are starting to realize they can educate themselves. I mean, I watch with awe as my son finds a YouTube that teaches him how to break down and put back together a 9mm pistol. So there are good things happening out there. But right now, our government is part of the problem, not part of the solution.
Mm-hmm. And is there really a way to reverse this trend towards dumbing down the populace? You mentioned around 1920 or so, but since the age of television, and Neil Postman made a very good argument in Amusing Ourselves to Death that TV has dumbed us down more than anything else by turning everything into entertainment and robbing life of not only of its intellectual depth, but also of any real moral dimension. And that's been getting worse and worse.
I agree, and someone smarter than me has pointed out that TV has also lost all sense of history, because there is no TV footage from prior to the 1940s, 1930s. And so all of the television stuff, which is largely crap, doesn't actually look at the scope of history. In fact, there's an excellent book by John Lewis Gaddis called The Landscape of History. And he talks about history as a denied area, and he talks about the many mistakes that we make in the present for lack of knowing history. Look, if I had to live my life over again, I would probably move to a small seaside village in Maine, and I would work to create the single most educated village and then county and then, you know, onwards from there. I do believe that the states and the counties and the municipalities are going to have to find their own way. The federal government is not going to be helpful in the near term as a solution. But I also believe that the internet is making it possible for all of us to come together and have an aha moment. And I believe electoral reform, if we had an Electoral Reform Act in 2015, we could elect an independent ticket such as Angus King and someone like Jill Stein, because I don't think Elizabeth Warren has what it takes to challenge and to leave the Democratic Party. Just as I found Dennis Kucinich will not challenge the Democratic Party and champion electoral reform.
How about Cynthia McKinney? I voted for her in 2008.
I like Cynthia McKinney very much. I think she would be an excellent candidate. I want to make this point here. I would vote for you as president, as long as you embrace the concept of a coalition cabinet and an open democracy. And at my presidential website, which is now simply an educational website, it's called bigbatusa.org. At bigbatusa.org, I have put forward a notional cabinet. So my winning ticket would be Angus King with Cynthia McKinney or Jill Stein or Elizabeth Warren, and a coalition cabinet that includes Ron Paul, Dennis Kucinich, Ralph Nader, Jesse Ventura, Cynthia McKinney, if she's not vice president, Carol Moseley Braun, Jim Hightower for agriculture, and so many other talented people. Mm-hmm. I want to get politics out of governance, is what it boils down to. I want to have intelligence-driven governance. I want to have government that is based on ethical, evidence-based decision support. And I want to have public national ballots on every single issue, including what becomes a public national ballot. One of the problems with the senator's idea about having the public vote on things is that who decides what gets voted on is twice as important as the actual vote.
Interesting. Well, how about the issue of the deep state? We talked about the false flag issue before, but Peter Dale Scott at University of California has done a lot of good work suggesting that there is a deep state consisting
of
there
is a deep state, yeah. And I've myself posted something on how there are seven CIAs. There is a deep state, and these people recruit their successors. You know, people forget that J. Edgar Hoover was a pedophile, and I'm quite certain that there is a network of highly placed pedophiles in the FBI whose job is to protect the elite pedophiles in Boston, New York, Washington, and elsewhere.
It sure looks like it.
Yeah. And so the FBI is not really doing counterintelligence. They're just going through the motions. They don't go after the Opus Dei penetrations of the U.S. government. They don't go after the Mossad and Zionist penetrations of the U.S. government. They certainly don't go after the Saudi Arabian penetrations of the U.S. government. So from where I sit, the FBI is largely worthless, and it shouldn't be. It should be one of our most important institutions. But I think we're at a point now. When I did my first thesis on predicting revolution, I recognized and documented that you have preconditions, you have precipitants. I think the United States of America is very close to a precipitating moment. And Jade Helm, which is a very badly conceived multinational, multi-state operation. If I were advising the president, I would urge him to cancel Jade Helm.
Mm-hmm. I was just going to ask you about that. So yeah,
that is a disaster waiting to happen. In my worst nightmare, the U.S. government, a portion of the deep state, will roll out some of these tools that can make people riot and make them crazy. There's already been reports about this having happened in Baltimore. Mm-hmm. People will riot. We'll have a Kent State times 10. Then the militia will mobilize and will start shooting down anybody wearing a uniform. And then there will be a draconian counterattack. They will try and lock down a state, as they did in the Boston bombing. And I personally do not think the U.S. government can win that one. So from where I sit, in the best interest of stability, I think Jade Helm should be canceled immediately.
Do you think it's been designed to bring on this kind of scenario?
My short answer is no. I believe that we have a bureaucracy that is out of control. It's got unlimited funding. It's got relatively unintelligent leadership. And it's just doing everything it can to spend as much money as possible without any thought of what is actually in the public interest. Yeah, without any comprehension of the law of unintended consequences. These people really do not understand that there are tens of thousands of militants out there who will regard Jade Helm as a deliberate provocation.
Right. What do you think about the violations of Posse Comitatus, the Fourth Amendment? You know, we've had these just utterly blatant violations of constitutional law.
They're unconstitutional. I mean, Obama, Biden, and Bush Cheney took unconstitutional measures to new heights. And I will remind everyone that Henry Kissinger is on record and garnered great laughter in the White House when he said one day, and this came out in the WikiLeaks series, he said, "The illegal we do immediately, the unconstitutional takes a little longer."
That's a good one.
Well, it's on the record. This is the attitude. Henry Kissinger is the prototype of the policy maven bureaucrat that we have today at all levels. The unconstitutional takes a little longer. There is no reluctance on the part of too many officials to violate the Constitution because, as Bill Clinton said when he took his blowjob from Monica Lewinsky, because they can.
Have you heard, as I have, that Kissinger used to introduce his courses at Harvard by saying in his deep, gravelly voice, "If there is anyone in this classroom who does not believe that the government has the right to lie, cheat, and steal, and break any law in pursuit of its objectives, he or she should get up and leave right now."
Well, that tells you, yes, and that tells you a lot about Kissinger, and it tells you a lot about the wannabes that attend Harvard.
And they never get out. They never walked out on him, from what I heard.
Well, because they're too stupid. You know, ethics is really important. Ethics and leadership are the acme of being a citizen and of being a leader and of being a serving officer in the armed forces or the police or anywhere else. And one of the problems that we have today is that our military leaders have come to the incorrect conclusion that they are obligated to either obey civilian orders or resign. And that's not correct. There's a middle way, which is they should support and defend the Constitution against all enemies, domestic and foreign. And when given an illegal order, they should not only refuse to obey it, they should impeach the person giving them the order.
That's what Bob Bowman said. In fact, I published his piece way back when, 2005 or 6, I think, urging any officers who were given an illegal or unconstitutional order, such as launching an illegal war or doing a false flag event, he urged them to arrest whoever gave them the order.
Well, I don't know if they have the power to arrest, but the bottom line is everybody is subject to this idea that they need to go along to get along. And all of these officers are thinking about their second careers. And they know that if they fight the warmongering civilian leadership and if they refuse to bomb innocents in Syria or anywhere else, then they will not get a second job with Lockheed Martin. Al Gore allowed Jeb Bush to steal the election for his brother. Greg Palast did a great job 3 months in advance of the election on the disenfranchisement of between 30 and 50,000 people. Al Gore knew that the election had been stolen. He knew that he could fight it at the Supreme Court level. And he was given the bribe offer by Warren Christopher. Warren Christopher came down and said, "Hey, Al, if you fight this, you will never get a corporate speaking fee in your life. If you go along with this as being within the bounds of reasonable dishonesty," a term I remember to this day, "then you will be rich beyond your dreams."
That's a direct quote?
Wait, reasonable don't interrupt me. Okay. Today, Al Gore is worth $100 million. That's his payoff.
That's a reasonable dishonesty, I guess.
That's very reasonable dishonesty.
Sounds very like kind of expensive dishonesty to me, but anyway.
Reasonable dishonesty. It takes two people to be dishonest.
How about Kerry in 2004?
Well, you know, John Kerry, I think of John Kerry as the guy who buried the Iran-Contra investigation because he was asked to. Gary Hart and many others had brought forward all of the information, including the fact that the Marine Corps Air Base El Toro was being used as the prime conduit for cocaine coming in from Nicaragua and going into Los Angeles. And Kerry was called. It was interesting because the Republican National Committee called the Democratic National Committee and the Democratic National Committee called Kerry. And what this really means is that it was the two-party tyranny that decided to bury the Iran-Contra investigation, and it was the Democrats who agreed. Similarly, to Joe Biden's killing the independent senator from Kansas to save his pal Senator Roberts, okay? Joe Biden basically went on national television the morning of that election and said, "I really want to welcome the independent candidate from Canada to the to the Democratic caucus, and that killed that man's very viable chances of defeating Senator Roberts. So when Kerry was asked by one of his senior staffers, why on earth did you just accept this request to bury Iran-Contra? Kerry responded, as it's reported in the literature, because this guarantees my place on a future national ticket. So from where I sit, John Kerry lacks integrity.
And I can't disagree with that either, or with much of what you've said. I think you're, as I said, you're barking up all of the right trees pretty much. And I congratulate you for that and wish you well in this pursuit of integrity and intelligence. We've hit the end of the hour. Tell us where people can go to find out more.
Well, I would be glad to have folks remember my personal bio page is robertdavidsteele.com. And the electoral reform page is tinyurl.com/openpower.
tinyurl.com/openpower. All right. Well, it's great stuff. Thank you so much, Robert David Steele. You're a true patriot and a visionary, and I appreciate your great work. Keep it up.
I have not given up on America the Beautiful. God bless.
Okay. God bless you, too. Thanks.
I'm a police. are controlling your brain. Suggestive thinking causing your perspective to change. They want to rearrange the whole point of view in the ghetto. The fourth branch of the government want us to settle. A bandana full of glittering generality, fighting for freedom and fighting terror. But what's reality? Martial law is coming soon to the hood to kill yo, while you hanging your flag out your project window. Yeah. The fourth branch of the government, aka the media, seems to now have a retirement plan for ex-military officials, as if they're